air volume into the core. We started with the aircraft concept, and we picked up the engine cowling around the radial Pratt & Whitney engine with the prop spinner in the center, and that set our theme then for the 49 Ford front end. Now, when the engineers saw this theme developing, and particularly the Ford engineer at the time, the body engineer, he felt that this absolutely was wrong as far as permitting air to get to the engine and to get to the core, because there was too much blockage, he thought, by the front end cowling. And he said it positively would not work. But I told George Walker that, in my judgment, it would work very well because the spinner front end, the spinner center piece, which was cone-shaped, into the cowl, the round drum around the center hub, was designed as a Venturi section. And the wing from the cowl out was also designed to facilitate the Venturi. So I said it should be very, very good for the wind tunnel requirement. Well, what happened was, in addition, we developed other front ends. In fact, this front end, being so radical, we decided not to put it on to the main car itself. We put a more conservative front on the main car with horizontal theme only. And we put the spinner front end on a side front end buck, which was a model from the cowl forward only of clay. And we developed this aside so that we wouldn't aggravate the engineering people too much. And it was a controversial front end, in my judgment, as well, and whether it would be bought. I was all for it. I thought it was great. And it was right in the groove for theme, because the war had just ended, and people were aware of the aircraft industry and its effect on everything. And so we developed this on this side buck.
We say we, really, it was your
It was. It was my personal design. For the front end.
And your signature on the car.
It was my personal signature on the 49 Ford. And in addition to this, as the front end was being developed, we did get members of course, the manufacturing people that came in to evaluate what we were doing for the front end and the back end and the cost people. And I had to make sure that all the front ends were within cost and manufacturing feasibility. And particularly, I was most conscious of this spinner front end that I was fathering and bird dogging through. And I had talked to Walker about this front end, and George W. Walker thought it would be great for the Ford car. Now, as the front end developed, an incident happened, which was that a person in sales with a very responsible position at Ford at the time walked through the studio as we were developing this front end, and he looked at this model that was going on the buck with this airplane type front end, and he gave it one look, turned to his people that were with him, and he said, "And that is out."
The spinner effect.
Yes. We're not going to do that. In other words, he was completely nonplussed when he saw this front end and just kept walking by. But he wanted to say something to indicate his authority or something relative to the 49 Ford's influence. And as the model developed and it was submitted to the wind tunnel, in the wind tunnel it proved to be exactly as we had predicted. It cooled beautifully. Mm-hmm. And much to the surprise of the engineers, it worked.
At this point, if I take you back a minute, a bit, your clay modeler at the time was so surprised.
Yes.
And what did he do?
I'm glad you asked me about that. The clay modeler at the time who worked on the spinner front end was Herman Summers. Mm-hmm. And Herman...
S-O-M-M-E-R-S,
I believe, a German modeler, a very capable person. And when this responsible person walked through and said, "And that one is out, absolutely," and he just put his tools down and looked at me and as much as to say, "Well, what next, Joe?" And I just turned to Herman as the man was leaving the studio and I said, "Herman, just keep modeling." And Herman proceeded to continue his modeling and we finished the model and it was submitted to test prior to approval for approval. And in the testing of the wind tunnel, it worked like a charm, and it proved that the Venturi worked.
And
so it cooled effectively, and the engineer that thought it would not work was absolutely surprised. Now, during the show, then management picked the front end that was not on the 49 Ford. But they went to the side buck with that spinner front end and put it on and asked that that front end be put onto the Ford car. And that was the one that was picked for the front end. And I had kept George W. Walker appraised of what was happening in its development. At that time, George W. Walker was in Florida and was vacationing with Mr. Breach at the time in Florida. And he was back shortly afterwards to see what the model looked like after we had then put it on to the front end of the main model. And also on the back end, Elwood Engel contributed then his taillight theme, which was rather nondescript on the original proposal, with the vertical lights built into a vertical theme. Mm-hmm. He turned the tail lights so they would be horizontal, more like aircraft Venturi wind splits.
On the rear quarters.
On the rear quarter, and this gave it the distinctive touch to the back end. So then the 49 Ford was properly launched with a distinctive back end and a very distinctive front end, and the only thing left to do after that was the side ornamentation of the bright moldings, and to develop the instrument panel and the interiors along with it. Now, in development of the instrument panel, Elwood and I had brainstormed what we should do to the instrument panel, and I suggested to Elwood that we ought to concentrate our design effort and make our design of the instrument panel a center cluster theme. Because in my judgment, I said, the center cluster theme would be the least expensive way to house all the instruments in one unit, so that that would be very easy to assemble for manufacturing and would be the least costly. And it would also be very dramatic. And in addition, I said, it also would give us the effect of an aircraft feeling. Mm-hmm. So we proceeded with that theme of the center cluster theme and with our center motif through the instrument panel of a wing section. Mm-hmm. So we've related the interior instrument panel to the aircraft industry as well. So, as well as the front end and the back end.
So in effect, you had in one broad stroke, you had brought aerodynamics back to the...
Without realizing it, at such an early date, we set at an early date, the first aerodynamic considerations for an automobile, which was the Venturi theme for the front end, an aircraft derivative wind split for the back end, and an aircraft feel for the instrumentation instrument panel cluster.
Plus the very soft, smooth.
And of course the smooth exterior shell-like approach to the car itself.
The roundness.
It was a major departure from the original automobiles of the period, and it was not, I understand, a total bang-up accepted design at the very introduction, but it was accepted. It was a new concept that the people grew to like very much, and it became very, very, very successful. So we continued then.
Forgive me if I ask one quick question. Back to the instrument panel.
Yes.
One factor which you designed into it, and which I'm sure was under consideration, was the convenience of having all of the vital gauges and devices that told the motorist exactly what he needed to know about the operation of the car.
Right.
Was in a
very
the
center
cluster.
Mm-hmm. And this was unique for the time as well. And it proved to be one of the least expensive Ford instrument panels that were ever designed. And I don't think there's been a cheaper one designed since. And in addition to that, I don't think there has been one that was simpler, yet as strong in concept as the original 49 Ford instrument panel.
And as utilitarian.
And very utilitarian.
Yes, right.
And no frills. And
but very exciting.
Very exciting.
Today, I think it's, as you may not have said, a hallmark in terms of instrument design.
Right.
What is the precise term for the
The instrument panel.
Instrument panel.
Right.
Instrument panel design.
And the cluster.
And the cluster.
Right. Now, the theme, then, of the Ford front end, we maintained on the Ford car and developed the spinner front end theme. Now, an aside, hearsay, I cannot say for sure that this happened, but a friend of mine mentioned to me that had been working at General Motors at the time that when the Ford front end, when the car was about to be introduced, that in the design section at General Motors, they were seriously considering a similar front end for the Pontiac car. But that was not used because the Ford was coming out with almost the identical theme, which in a sense shows how the car world and the design world works. Namely, that the aircraft industry had a tremendous impact on the automotive design world, both at General Motors, Chrysler, and Ford Motor, in establishing themes that were related to the aircraft.
Certainly you're right. It was
both as fins and front ends and tail lights and so forth.
Well, you've completed the design, has been approved. What next? What was your next step?
Well, our next step at Ford, we lost the Ford account.
Well, forgive me. What I meant was it's gone into production.
The car went into production, and it was a tremendous success.
Tell us a bit about its reception with the buying public.
The buying public, by and large, were very much influenced and very much impressed with the Ford car. It was a new statement. It did the job it was required to do. In other words, take Ford out of the doldrums and put it on a new footing. And this was all in keeping with Young Henry's new direction for Ford Motor Company.
It won a design award.
Yes, it won design awards in Europe, mm-hmm. and France for the concept of the 49 Ford, and it was a new fashion, new trendsetter, mm-hmm. and in addition to that, Ford Motors' design effort from that time on became a more youthful and more spirited approach to car design. In fact, to an extent, we feel at Ford that we pioneered in design aesthetics some very youthful themes and spirited youthful appearance to the Ford cars. And we were considered by the writers of the 50s as more youthful than even General Motors' approach to the Ford product.
It won a Fashion Design Institute Award.
And it did that too.
In 1949.
Right.
With others. So it's successfully launched. You're in effect the toast of your
We were successfully launched, and we were the toast of the industry, and the car was a total success and just what the doctor wanted, but we did not retain the Ford account consultants. We were not retained as consultants for the 1950 facelift.
What happened?
What happened was something strange that I could never understand, and I guess George Walker couldn't understand. George W. Walker lost the Ford account. I imagine it was felt that we did our job and we were well paid, and so they didn't need us.
Thanks a lot, fellas. We'll go on
and,
from here.
You know, we'll go on from here. Yeah. And then what happened was that a tremendous effort was made to change the 1950 front end of the Ford car from a spinner type to some other kind of a front end that would not be such a strong mark as the spinner type. Mm-hmm. For what reason? I don't know. And I do know that the design office at Ford Motor worked desperately to come up with new front end ideas, and they were not successful. Mm. And finally, Ford management bought only a minor facelift to the 49 Ford, which was to change the taillights from being integrated into the center bar with a little wraparound pad detailing on the body side. So it was the parking lights on the front end that were changed, and the detailing around the parking lights. The grill was kept intact because they couldn't come up with anything that was as good or as dramatic, and Ford management felt that it would be too risky to abandon such a tremendous theme. And the Ford group at the time just added a new hood ornament
above
the grill and the hood, and they changed the lock detailing on the deck lid.
Uh-huh.
And that was the extent of the change that they incorporated. And Ford management then invited George W. Walker and his staff back to Ford Motor to continue consulting on the total gamut of the Ford products.
Now, at this time, was this a result of this episode? At this time, you've described the fact that, perhaps it's been happening over a period of months, someone at Ford, perhaps Ernie Breech, was importing a phalanx of General Motors design people.
Well, what had happened was that we left Ford with the 49 Ford after its introduction, and Ford management then hired from General Motors designers. Oswald was hired.
George Oswald.
Charlie Oswald, was hired from General Motors, mm-hmm. who had been with Oldsmobile, to head the Department of Design mm-hmm. for Ford Motor. And George Snyder mm-hmm. was hired from General Motors, who was a special projects designer at General Motors and a very capable designer. And also, Gene Bordney was hired.
Your old colleague and classmate.
Who was at Chevrolet Studio.
Uh-huh.
And he was also a classmate of mine at the Ford, General Motors School,
mm-hmm.
along with Elwood
mm-hmm.
and others. And we were asked to come back then for the 1950.
And you mentioned Bob McGuire also.
And Bob McGuire was also hired at that time in this group.
Oddly enough, a former studio head, Frank of GM.
And of course, then Frank Hershey was there also. So there were quite a few people that were hired by Ford people from General Motors. Were Frank Hershey, Oswald, Gene Bordney, Bob McGuire,
George Snyder.
And George Snyder.
And Oswald.
And Oswald, right.
Yes,
uh-huh.
Well,
and
so
then
do
we.
Do you think they were the ones who tried to.
They had the full responsibility for facelifting the 1950 Ford. And they spent a tremendous effort to try to change the Ford and leave a mark of distinction on their contribution for this car, but they were totally stopped with the strong theme of the car. They couldn't beat it,
uh-huh.
and they couldn't come up with anything better that management was happy with. So Ford management then decided to stay with the car theme as it was set by George W. Walker.
This is very odd that this high-powered phalanx of imported designers couldn't make any substantive changes in your original design.
Well, they made a lot of change contributions, but none of them were accepted.
None of them were accepted. Ah, okay, good.
Now, I don't know what they looked like because we were not part and parcel
right.
to the 1950 theme developments that were occurring. But we heard after we came back
uh-huh.
that a tremendous effort had been made. And without any avail, they had to resort back to facelifting the original 49.
Years later, did you ever sit down with Gene Bordney and say, Gene, what did you try to do to our design?
Well, you know, that would have been something pretty interesting to talk about and
yeah.
pull Gene's leg about, but I never did it.
You were too kind. John Oswald, I believe, was...
John Oswald,
yes,
right.
Well, please continue. You're back.
Well, after
we
were hired, George W. Walker asked that I continue in the Ford end,
mm-hmm.
and he asked that Elwood concentrate his efforts in the Lincoln Mercury end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way we divided our work. And then we overlapped. We concentrated in each area, but we overlapped into each other's areas.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'd spend most of my time in the Ford Division lineup of cars and trucks. Elwood spent most of his time in Lincoln Mercury. But he too would walk into the Ford studio area and talk with me about what we were doing and come up with some suggestions and critiques. And I too would walk into the Lincoln Mercury area, and I too would come up with suggestions and critiques that I would pass on to Elwood or we talk about with George. And that was the beginning and the triumvirate team effort of the George W. Walker, Elwood Engel, and Joe Ars combination. And as the contract proceeded, we were eventually written into the contract as George W. Walker and his assistants, Joe Ars and Elwood Engel. So we were called out in the contract and specifically inserted.
But it was a consultancy contract.
It was a consultancy contract, and then we eventually joined Ford Motor. All right, now, on May 2nd, 1955, George W. Walker, Elwood Engel, and I joined Ford Motor.
Officially.
Officially. And we went on Ford Motor's direct salary. Mr. L.D. Crusoe hired me directly.
Did he really?
And Elwood. And I remember George jokingly told me, he said, you know what Crusoe told me? What did he tell you, George? And he said, well, he said that I was a piker all these years. I said, well, George.
What did he mean by that?
He meant that he didn't pay us enough money.
Okay.
But he did, really. He was a great guy.
So
on May 2nd, 55, we joined Ford Motor officially, and then on May 12th, 1955, the lineup of the studio heads were as follows per blue letter of that date, and it was Ford Styling Studio, R.H. McGuire, Chief Stylist. Mercury Styling Studio was E. Bordenay, Chief Stylist. Lincoln Styling Studio was John Najar, Chief Stylist.
We'd been with the original unit when you
came. And Special Products Styling Studio was Roy A. Brown Jr., Chief Stylist. Staff Advanced and Special Styling Studio was A.S. Tremulous, Chief Stylist. And this was the composition or the complement, the composure of the whole styling studio.
But you left out two important people on the second page of that blue letter.
Yes, you might say, well, where is Joe Ars and Elwood Engel? Well, we were still there as we had been during the previous years. Mm-hmm. Namely, as contributors to the Lincoln Mercury and the Ford End, which was divided between Elwood and I.
Can you read the actual language of the second page of the blue letter?
The second page of the blue letter says, Elwood Engel and Joseph Ars will serve as staff stylists, reporting directly to the vice president and director of styling. They will continue to work with the styling studios on matters relating to exterior and interior styling of all vehicle lines. Further announcement of styling office organization appointments will be made in the near future. Signed, George W. Walker, Vice President and Director of Styling.
I think you meant 1955.
Right.
Well, that clarifies very nicely. Now, however, you're about three or four years ahead of yourself in terms of chronology. Could we get back to the development of the next development, which I think you said would be the 1951 Ford, and whether or not it was a departure from the 4950 Ford, or whether it was an extension of it?
Well, the 51 Ford was an extension of the 49 Ford. The 49 being so highly successful, and the 50 equally. And we did not want to abandon the theme.
The basic theme.
And it proved so right. So we continued with the spinner front end and developed the spinner front end as dual spinners for the 51 Ford. And
now, when you say dual spinners, what precisely do you mean?
Well, by dual spinners, taken the center aircraft theme from the center of the grill that was there in the 49 through the 50, and we literally added two pods on the horizontal grill bar, and still in keeping with the aircraft theme of the twin engine. And it was still the aircraft spinner front end derivative. And we continued that theme then through 51 with the rest of the car in minor facelifting. Now, of course, what happened at this time and prior to the 51 and in the development period of the 51 Ford car was that we were consultants at this time. We were not officially on the Ford payroll, only as consultants. And as consultants, we had a tremendous task, which was to meld in properly with the Ford design office. There was, without question, a lot of competitive resistance, to put it mildly, in respect that it was felt that some of the Ford people, designers, felt that maybe they were not getting a fair shake, and that too many of the products were being influenced by the consultants of George W. Walker and Elwood Engel and Joe Orris as a team. And every effort was made to everything that we started. We had the ability as consultants and given to us by Ford management to start new clay models in the studio area in competition with any of the models that might be going if the consultants felt they could do something better than was currently being done by the Ford group. Or if it was felt by the consultants that it was difficult to incorporate their thinking to a model that was in progress by the Ford group at the time, and to make changes to it would have radically changed that model, then we had the ability and the power to start our own models as consultants and to give forth with our ideas as to what we thought the models should look like across the board in Lincoln Mercury, in the Ford end, and also the truck end. Now, of course, this caused a lot of tension
with
the regular staff. And every effort was made to impede, subtly, of course, any design contributions that we may have that could be in competition with what they were at Ford trying to sell Ford management. And so it was a terrible way to work in the way because of the competition between the regular Ford staff versus the consultants.
But the stress and the tension must have been
the
terrific.
Stress and the tension was tremendous. And it was unbelievable. After we joined Ford Motor officially, and George W. Walker became vice president, Elwood and I were his staff consultants, then the tensions eased and were completely eliminated, excepting that some of the underlying tensions were still there in subtle ways. The newly arrived at Ford Design, and to make sure that we all did the right things, and we as staff consultants to George W. Walker had it difficult even then to ensure that we did meld properly with the designers, not ruffle too many feathers, yet if needed, to change the products, because now they were our direct responsibility. In other words, we had the direct responsibility, George W. Walker and his staff, to ensure that all the products were to the highest quality.
You make a point in your manuscript, I think, which is you may have been about to make here, that in spite of this, there was a benefit to this tension and competitiveness.
Yes, in spite of it, there was a benefit in respect that it ensured Ford management that every effort was being made to come up with the maximum effort in designing the Ford products. So the tension was good in a sense, but by the same token, it was quite wearing in another way.
But the company got a maximum return.
The company
got
its maximum return.
Right.
And of course, along with this, in top management, and specifically in product planning, there were many young people that were in product planning that also wanted to make sure that everything was exactly right and going to be right for the marketplace. And sometimes we duplicated our efforts more than once just to please everybody. And this also was a strain.
I can imagine. One possible obstacle to Mr. George Snyder, you mentioned that
George Snyder, shortly after George W. Walker, before George Walker took his vice presidency, George Snyder was assigned to Ford of Europe. And he remained then in Ford of Europe, and looked over all of the Ford European car products.
He oversaw the design effort. This is kind of an interesting development. Normally, in those years, you weren't in the habit of sending, or were you, overseers to the international design.
Not too much prior to that time, to my knowledge.
Yeah.
George Snyder was one of the first that went to Europe, and he did a good job, eventually George Snyder returned to the United States, and he had some medical problems, and shortly afterwards had passed away, unfortunately. Now, as the cars developed from 52 on, and starting with the 52 car, another theme was set that was a hallmark. I set the theme of the round taillight for the Ford car. Mr. L.D. Crusoe thought that the round taillight on the 52 Ford was too big. He was concerned about its size.
Why?
Well, he just thought it was just too large, and it really wasn't.
Was he concerned about the effect that a red light would have on him?
No, he was concerned, well, possibly, but he was just concerned that the taillight diameter was too large. So
out of
proportion in his judgment,
yeah.
And he wondered if it could be reduced. We did reduce it for Mr. Crusoe, I believe, something like a half inch or thereabouts, and or 3/4 inch in diameter, but oddly enough, that taillight on the 52 Ford finally grew in size to the size of the 1959 Ford taillight, which was, several times the diameter of the original 1952 Ford taillight, and it was a continuing theme through those years with many detailed variations. And again, the original 52 Ford taillight was a derivative theme of the aircraft jet exhaust system. So it proved apropos to the Ford car. So we continued with the spinner front end and with the round taillights as hallmarks of the Ford car products as they came out continuing through the years.
I note here something I've not noted before, that on the 52 Ford you have got, in effect, a tri-motor effect.
No.
When you've got three spinners.
Oh, yes, that's right, that's right, that's right. We were spinner happy.
Yeah, but it works. It's,
right?
It fits nicely aesthetically, yes.
And now, along with the 52 Ford car development, an interesting aside. At the time the 52 Ford was being introduced, the 1955 Thunderbird was being developed in the Ford division, in the Ford studio area.
Which was your responsibility.
Which in 19, at the time the 55 was being developed, we were not yet, it was starting to be developed, we were not officially in Ford Motor as Ford Motor employees. We were still consultants. But the 52 Ford had an effect on the original 55 Thunderbird. Uh-huh. Namely, that we used the headlight bezels.
Mm-hmm. Which are the outer cowling.
Outer cowling of the of the headlights from the 52 Ford, mm-hmm. for the start of the Thunderbird front end.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Thunderbird front end at that time and during this period, the Ford Studios chief was Bob McGuire, Frank Hershey. And under Frank Hershey, Bob McGuire was his exec in charge of the cars. And for Bob McGuire as manager of the Thunderbird studio, special studio, at that time that was set up a special area to develop this Thunderbird.
It had not yet been named.
Had not been named.
Right.
Was the manager at the time was Bill Boyer, in charge of this special project studio for the Ford studio, working for Bob McGuire. Now at that time, again, we were consultants, and I was in the early beginnings working, consulting, not only on the Ford cars, but of course on all of the Ford line of cars, including the 55 Thunderbird and the trucks.
Uh-huh.
And so the 55 Thunderbird was really an inspirational beginning to try to counteract the Corvette from General Motors.
Mm-hmm. Which had been introduced in what? 52, I think?
Something like that. Mm-hmm. And and Frank Hershey thought it would be a good thing to try to come up with a specialty type car that was being developed in this special studio, which was managed at the time by Bill Boyer, who worked for Bob McGuire, chief stylist.
Before we get into that, I wonder if I might bring you back a couple of years, or a year or two. You're largely credited with developing the hardtop effect for Ford. Can you describe that briefly?
The hardtop effect for Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, the Ford hardtop, the greenhouses,
mm-hmm.
were developed on the Ford cars as a reaction to efforts by General Motors with some of their hardtops.
Mm-hmm.
That they were being introducing, and the Ford hardtops were unique from GM, and they were additive to the sedan lineup.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we, the greenhouses were assembled on the line along with the sedan, two-door, four-door sedans, and with the specialty greenhouses added. Now, actually, some of the work of the early Fords, such as the precursor to the hardtops, was of course the 1951 Crestliner, where a body molding was added to the 1951 car and a two-tone added within that body molding, a wing-like contour on the body side.
Again, almost an airfoil. Right?
And with the contour. Greenhouse with a vinyl top. Mm-hmm. And this was as the least expensive way to get to the feeling of some kind of a hardtop appearance, a specialty model. This original model of the Crestliner is attributable to Bob McGuire's effort as a chief stylist for the Ford studio, and he and his designers were responsible for this appearance. And it proved very successful in the marketplace. And then from this appearance, and this was an effort of, again, Snyder, McGuire, and their team, and it was totally a Ford design effort. We as consultants did not have much to do with that contribution.
You meant to Hershey and McGuire.
Yes, Hershey and McGuire.
Yes.
And again, it was a successful stopgap. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, in 1952, we added the hardtop version to the 52 lineup in the car body design. And we also had a version stopgap in 1951. I'm retracing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a hardtop in 51, and that one we had influence on in its development as consultants on the 51 hardtop.
Thank you. I wonder if we might then consider the story of the, if you think it's apropos at this point, the story of the development of the Thunderbird, as you were beginning to do.
Yes, the Thunderbird developed in a specialty place with Bob, Bill Boyer being the manager of the studio, working for McGuire under Hershey, and then consultants, myself, in and out, contributing to the car's development. And specifically, things that I can consider I had influence on was the development, of course, of the 55 Ford, and the bezels, ironically, strictly for cost reasons, mm-hmm. came from the 52 Ford. Then, in addition to that, I had made a suggestion to add the louvers and the continuation of the round taillight, the character line through the door into the louver area. And I made that recommendation working with the designers and Bill Boyer. And the front end was developed by the studio. And again, it was team effort. You have to realize that all of the design work on the cars has never been a solo one-man operation, never, because it's team effort. There are a lot of designers. A designer may have the germ of the idea of what the front end should look like. He may set the pattern, but by the time he's through, other designers will have added recommendations and suggestions and so forth to improve it. So it's a team effort in that respect. And additionally, the whole car, all of its appointments, takes a lot of effort where physically it would be too much for one person. So one person cannot say, I did a car. It's just too much. Lay people always ask this question, who was the man who designed such and such a car?
Especially the Thunderbird.
Well, it isn't one man, it's a group of men that have pooled their ideas together and barnstormed the ideas and put it all together. And that's generally the way it works. Now, Bill Boyer remained in the Thunderbird end of the business for me for most of the years. In fact, almost all of the years, I kept Bill Boyer since he was familiar with the smaller, sportier type cars, and I kept him as my manager in the Thunderbird studio. And but now I'm ahead of myself.
All right.
If I may retrogress just a step. Gotta get a date. Now I've gotta get back to basics. Mm-hmm. On March 19, 1956, a styling organization office occurred, and I was appointed chief stylist of the Ford Styling Studio officially. Mr. Orris was formerly special staff assistant to the vice president and director of styling. The appointment of Mr. R.H. McGuire as chief stylist of the newly expanded staff advanced studio is being covered in a separate communication. Bob McGuire took over as chief stylist of the special advanced studio, and I then formally took over as chief stylist of the Ford studio and the trucks, which included also the interiors at that time. It was both the inside and the outside. And having given this responsibility, then I maintained Bill Boyer as continuing with the Thunderbird studio, because he was associated with the development of the first 55 Thunderbird and did a remarkable good job as a manager and pulled it together and worked well with the management group and was liked by everybody. And I liked him because he had a certain verve about himself, and I liked him because I believe he had an aircraft background, and I just like his young flyer approach. And so I thought it'd be good just to retain Bill Boyer in that spot. And as the T-Birds developed, the next big thing that happened was that after the 55, I should say, was introduced, the 56 T-Bird had the 55 had a criticism. The criticism was that it was a blind spot inside of the T-Bird if you looked over your right shoulder because of the wide C-pillar of the greenhouse. And Mr. Crusoe asked us to fix it so we wouldn't have any damaging lawsuits against Ford Motor because of that blind spot. So I added personally the round porthole then to the 56. And then, of course, the greenhouse, and then, of course, the back end received the Continental kit, if you recall.
Right.
And then in 57, the T-Bird was modified again. This time in history, relative to the 55, as the 55 borrowed from the 52 Ford, the 57 T-Bird borrowed from the 1957 Ford car with the rear quarter panel fin-like development. which was to keep it in the Ford family styling.
In other words,
design.
It was called Thunderbird styling.
It was Thunderbird styling, but it had a Ford family look.
Mm-hmm.
It picked up some of the Ford 1957 characteristics. It
gave the broad,
gave
homogeneous look.
Gave the flared fin
yeah.
tail light look. Uh-huh. And again, we borrowed the 1957 tail light assembly
uh-huh.
and put it on the 1957 T-Bird. In reverse to what we did to the 55.
Interesting juxtaposition of marketing and design.
Right.
Working together.
Exactly. Now this was, in a sense, very important in order to establish a Ford family look.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a spirited look.
Mm-hmm.
And our cars were being written as being youthful.
Mm-hmm.
And the 57 Thunderbird assisted in this.
The Ford family of fine cars.
Of fine cars, right. And youthful cars at that time.
Right.
And in addition, it was felt that the 57 maximum sales was only about 17,000 units that year. And it was felt that the 58 as a four-seater should increase, and it did. It made a dramatic increase in sales with the four-seater introduction than as the 58 four-seater.
Let me interrupt you at this point for
mm-hmm.
one small historical point, which may feel is not too important, but I think it is. When Mr. Crusoe reported that he had heard complaints about the blind rear quarter of the 55 Thunderbird.
Of the greenhouse.
The greenhouse, yes.
Yes.
You decided to open it up by using, as you described, as a porthole effect.
Right.
Where did you get this inspiration from?
I have to tell you that I was influenced by the Raymond Loewy specialty car or something that was at one time introduced in some show.
Mm-hmm.
And
one of his advanced design cars.
One of his ideas. I believe it came from that. I don't know positively, but anyhow, I believe Raymond Loewy also used it. I thought it would be an excellent thing to add
mm-hmm.
to the greenhouse because as a porthole, it would not be in conflict being totally round with anything on a greenhouse, and it would be a hallmark something that we could carry.
You probably were also instinctively aware that in the carriage industry, one of the earlier cabriolets also included I guess they called an opera window at that time, did they not?
They called an opera window, and further, a hallmark derivative from the carriage industry was the Lando bar.
Ah, yes.
Which I had added.
Mm-hmm.
It was my suggestion to add the Lando bars
mm-hmm.
to the Thunderbird lineup as a continuing hallmark.
A motif.
Motif
mm-hmm.
for the Thunderbird car.
Good.
And this was added, we continued with the Lando bars for several models.
Right.
Yeah. And then as the models developed, the 58 into 59 and 60s, 59, we made a break in 1960.
Can I ask one question, please? Forgive mm-hmm. me. Was the four-seater concept of the 58 Thunderbird acceptable to you as a logical development?
It was primarily a development and an analysis arrived at by the product planning staff of Ford Motor that a four-seater, sporty four-seater, would be far better for the return on investment than continuing with the two-door.
Mm-hmm.
And they were right.
And more acceptable to the buying public
yes.
as well.
And Bob McNamara, who was vice president of Ford Division at the time, was the vice president when the four-seater was being developed. And I remember attending many meetings at Bob McNamara's office in the original strategy and thinking about the reasons and what this car should look like in Bob McNamara's small strategy group.
Mm-hmm.
And when I returned to the office, I would have to say now, I should, to clarify anything I may say in the future, I was in charge of the Ford studio, interior, exterior, including trucks. And in the truck area, I had Willis P. Wagner, who had the responsibility of bird dogging and watching to make sure that our trucks were in the proper design and proper as far as cost and feasibility. He attended the cost and feasibility meetings. I did not because I couldn't have that time. Mm-hmm. My exec handled that portion of the business for me. And in the Ford studio area, it was Damon Woods,
mm-hmm,
who handled the exterior.
D-A-M-O-N.
Yes, who handled the exterior portion of the design directly under me. And my method of operation was that I would always have a meeting with my executive